Disney staked out the Memorial Day weekend a long time ago for the release of Solo, A Star Wars Story, hoping that the holiday would be a launching pad for a new spin-off series. It didn't work out quite the way they had hoped. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Today we discuss the new film Solo, A Star Wars Story, and a unique miniseries hybrid offering from AMC called The Terror, with frequent on-film contributor Gene Creel. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning.
We've been watching a lot, but first up, Star Wars, much hyped, much marketed, trying to overcome some early problems with the directing chair.
Right.
What did you think of Star Wars?
Well, I'm certainly not what one would call a Star Wars geek or even aficionada. So I approached the film with an open mind and virtually no preconceived ideas or expectations. Much has been made of whether there was a reason to even make this film, how risky to find an actor gutsy enough to emulate a youthful Han Solo. But since so little was ever really revealed about his past, why not? And the screenplay is by Lawrence Kasdan and his son Jonathan. Lawrence Kasdan was screenwriter on, I believe, three other Star Wars films, including The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. So one might expect a credible, qualified, even enlightened reveal of
good
his
pedigree,
origin.
Right?
Well, they've crafted a credible tale. After all, what do we really know? And they include enough familiar earmarks that make it unmistakable as a Star Wars story, perhaps with emphasis on the word story. We find out how Han got his name, how he and Chewbacca became buddies, how he acquired the ship. There are the club and party scenes filled with out-of-this-world characters. And, of course, the iconic soundtrack composed and adapted by John Powell. And now, what we did learn about Han Solo from the beginning of the saga was that he was a smuggler, had a price on his head, had seemingly no allegiance to anyone or anything but Han Solo. Mm-hmm. In this film, we learn that he was forced into a life of crime as a youth. He longs to escape the evil planet with his girlfriend, become a pilot, and have adventures. And after escaping, though without the girlfriend, he eagerly joins forces with Beckett, a career criminal. And so you see this pattern. This is the path he's chosen. Well, Alden Ehrenreich, his characterization is mouthy and reckless and defiant. It seems to me that he just never loses his immature, boyish affability. I kept waiting to see some character development into this cynical, hardened character that we first meet in the Star Wars films.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, I was one of the millions who stood in line multiple times in 1977 to see Star Wars over and over and over that May of 77.
Uh-huh.
And over the last 40 years, coming out of the film, I was thinking, you know, at no point in the last 40 years was I thinking, boy, I wish I could see a young Han Solo film.
Where did he come from?
It's a big mountain to get over. And clearly, as the Star Wars, the nine series of films are going to be coming to a conclusion soon, Disney is looking to capitalize on their multi-billion-dollar investment in Lucasfilm to try to figure out ways to expand this universe, to spin off characters, to do more series. And Han Solo, I can see the accounting behind it. But then the last few months, we've been treated to just one article after another about all of the production problems, the delays, the firing of the two co-directors, the bringing in of Ron Howard. You know, the story shifted. And so I went into this film thinking I'm about to see a real mess and came out shrugging, saying, okay, well, it's a Ron Howard film. It's not great.
Mm-hmm.
It's competent. The acting is good. The visuals are beautiful. The music is good. But like most Ron Howard films for me, it's just right down the middle. There was really no moment in this film where I thought, okay, that's why this movie needs to exist, other than as an excuse for Disney to print more money. And they're even struggling at that, which became another story this week, which is its low box office returns, even though it crossed the $100 million mark.
Very true.
I hate to talk about box office in relation because it has no relation to quality of product, but that became the story this week as well. And I think it just plays up the fact that maybe they've gone a story too far.
Right, right. And I, as you say, box office isn't equivalent to quality, but it is a measure. And when these large blockbusters are put up against each other, you see where Solo is falling. Now, whether it's Wonder Woman or Guardians of the Galaxy or even Deadpool, films like these thrive on the Motley Crue device to keep it going. And this film is no exception. There are some really noteworthy performances in this film. Woody Harrelson was very good as the mentor criminal.
Donald Glover as Lando Calrissian.
Lando Calrissian. And, Phoebe Waller-Bridge's the voice of his droid, LS-L3.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. I wish she had had more screen time.
That could have a spinoff, that droid alone. Fascinating things happening there. But all in all, lackluster, I guess. I appreciate Lawrence Kasdan's attempt to make a quasi-space Western out of this. There are little nods to Westerns, including a train robbery, a high-tech train robbery, which made me think, leaving the theater, do they have trains? When they have so many spaceships, do they still move freight on trains? But, you know, it attempts to be a fun action film. It answers a lot of questions that I didn't have.
Sure. Uh-huh.
Which,
his name, where...
Right. I mean, it's almost a checking off of boxes. I can see someone sitting down and mapping out this film very logically. Say, well, we have to explain where this came from and this came from and this came.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kind of go down the list. And
I thought maybe they didn't really get to that really cool, cynical Han Solo because they anticipated a sequel. But I don't see it coming.
Yeah. Well, something we've been watching on cable, actually, has really struck our opinions and recommendations. And I wanted to get to the terror. Cable channel AMC has made a name for itself for pushing boundaries of the television landscape from Breaking Bad to The Walking Dead. You know, AMC has really championed high-quality series, often with very mature subject matter that pushes a lot of boundaries as well. Their new miniseries, The Terror, which just wrapped its 11-episode run, maintains the channel's pedigree while charting a new path for short-run drama narratives on TV by being less modern, actually, surprisingly.
Yes.
The terror of the title is multifold. It's the name of one of two sister ships dispatched from England in the mid-19th century to find a northern route to the Pacific, the elusive Northwest Passage. What first promises to be a nautical adventure tale quickly devolves into a study of men adapting to creeping hopelessness as the two sailing ships become entrapped in Arctic pack ice. The men of the expedition, with delusions of glory still fresh in their minds, settle into routine, fighting boredom, the cold, the sound of shifting ice, and confinement, while they await a thaw that may never come. Like the characters, I found myself really stuck, too, with this. The show's attention to detail is remarkable, and its use of copious amounts of computer graphics to render the vast icy horizon and sprawling Arctic night sky really got me. Its design aesthetic opts not for photorealism that the CGI of today can deliver. Instead, it delivered a really expressionistic rendering of this white hell that these men find themselves in. Blocks of ice, chipped and sculpted by the wind, ominously, even unnaturally, surround these trapped ships. The production design signals from the beginning that there are threats unimaginable on the ice. This is a really menacing place. Later, when the crew abandons ship and marches south, firmament offers no respite. The CGI landscape of the show's first half gives way to a real-life landscape of just sharp, hard, rocky, barren, arid desert, Arctic-wise, even harder than the pack ice. It's a menacing, unyielding alien world that they lay out for these men to inhabit. And it's a testing ground for these men of different ranks, class, and fortitude, and their tests are not entirely of their own making or comprehension. A chance encounter on the ice with two Arctic natives in one of the first episodes turns accidentally deadly, and this transgression unleashes an enormous beast, yeah, a monster. This becomes a bit of a horror film along the way.
Along the way.
You know, which really sets this creature, if you want to call it that, sets about dispatching the sailors one at a time, and sometimes in whole groups. The terror of starvation, cold, and death aren't the only existential threats circling the expedition. As years pass, decaying morale, physical wasting, and madness take hold while the beast whittles away at the expedition's numbers. There's lots that sets The Terror apart from other prestige cable series. Over its 11 episodes, the show weaves an impressive set of narratives together. The clash of cultures, the arrogance of first world adventurers coming into contact with native others, the known world meeting the unknown, the limitations of 19th century medicine and science in the face of the supernatural, the primacy of unyielding environment, and most centrally, as the show evolves, the challenge of leadership in increasingly hopeless times, all without really feeling ever contemporary, which just really got me too,
right,
is that
right.
This is not a 21st century take on the 19th century. You really feel like you're there. But for me, one of the things that works so phenomenally for the show is its pacing, which is unlike any other show of recent memory. Deliberately slow in its unfolding, The Terror sucks us into its world, conforming us to its own sense of time. It sets itself apart in a 21st century media landscape by being very 19th century in its construction. It's glacially slow, pun intended, and gets away with it because the slowness is in the service of the story's central predicament and geography. If you're looking for an adrenaline rush, look elsewhere. But if you give The Terror an hour or two unrushed, you'll get swept up in a story of men pushed to diminution and swallowed by an abstract landscape and inexplicable monster. I really, really like this series.
Really? I really enjoyed the way the Inuit mythology is woven into this story against the backdrop of these interlopers. They're so out of their element, both literally and figuratively, and they've blundered in, and the underlying themes of appropriation and occupation, it's evident throughout, and the massive failure of that attempt. But I think, as you say, don't be put off by the fact that there's not a lot of action. And it's hard to imagine 11 episodes when we all know, really, from the outset, how this is going to basically end, not well. But again,
the production is worth it.
Yes, and the production values in so much television right now, it's beginning to surpass film. I'm getting kind of concerned. And you know what's interesting about so many of these multi-part series, they have various directors, writers, cinematographers, as did this, and yet the continuity is seamless.
Yeah.
And the soundtrack is
and just
awesome.
Builds and builds even as the numbers dwindle and dwindle. And these men are visually even isolated in the landscape as the show continues, these vast landscapes where these tiny dots, you just get a sense of the earth itself swallowing them.
Right, right. Many, many overhead shots.
Watch
minimizing.
This via streaming, no commercials.
Oh, that's right.
Now that this is over, it's
perfect.
You don't want to take your mind out of it by a commercial break.
That's true.
So highly recommended, it sounds like, on both our accords.
Definitely.
We ended, I wanted to mention one of my favorite films of the year came out on Blu-ray this week, Annihilation, which is one of the most intelligent science fiction films of recent memory. It's
surprise.
Beautiful. It's terrifying. It's a mostly all-woman cast,
Natalie
and it's on
Portman.
Blu-ray.
Excellent.
I've been discussing the new Star Wars film, Solo, and the miniseries, The Terror, with frequent on-film contributor Gene Creel. Solo, A Star Wars Story, is in theaters now and is rated PG-13, and The Terror has just completed its 11-episode run on AMC, and you can find it streaming on the AMC app or on Amazon, iTunes, and Google Play. A final program note, my monthly film series, The Film Salon, begins a new summer series looking at the screen pairing and real-life romantic partnership of Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn, with a screening tonight of their first film together, the 1942 romantic comedy Woman of the Year. The film screens at Alamo Drafthouse Cinema tonight at 6:30 p.m., and tickets are just $5, though almost sold out. On Film's producer is Lauren Terrazas. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.